Chapter 41. A Crown of Swords. Tossing, Rand dreamed. Wild dreams, where he argued with Perrin and begged Matt to find Elaine. Where colors flashed just beyond sight, and Padanfain leaped at him with a flashing blade. And sometimes he thought he heard a voice moaning for a dead woman in the heart of a fog. Dreams where he tried to explain himself to Elaine, to Avienda, to Min, to all three at once. And even Min looked at him with scorn. "Not to be disturbed," Cadswain's voice. Part of his dreams? The voice frightened him. In his dream he shouted for Luz Theron, and the sound echoed through a thick mist where shapes moved and people and horses died screaming. A fog where Cadswain followed him implacably, while he ran, panting. Alana tried to soothe him, but she was afraid of Cadswain too. He could feel her fear as strongly as his own. His head hurt, and his side. The old scar was fire. He felt Sidene. Someone held Sidene. Was it him? He did not know. He struggled to wake.
"You'll kill him," Min shouted. "I won't let you kill him."
His eyes opened, staring up at her face. Not looking at him, she had his head wrapped in her arms and was glaring at someone away from the bed. Her eyes were red. She had been crying, but no longer. Yes, he was in his own bed, in his rooms in the Sun Palace. He could see a heavy square blackwood bedpost set with wedges of ivory. Coatless, in a cream silk blouse, Min lay curled around him protectively, atop the linen sheet that covered him to the neck. Alana was afraid, that lay shivering in the back of his head. Afraid for him. For some reason he was sure of that.
"I think he is awake, Min," Amis said gently.
Min looked down, and her face, framed in dark ringlets, beamed with a sudden smile. Carefully, because he felt weak, he removed her arms and sat up. His head whirled dizzily, but he forced himself not to lie back again. His bed was ringed. To one side stood Amis, flanked by Bera and Karuna. Amis's two youthful features bore no expression at all, but she brushed back her long white hair and shifted her dark shawl as though tidying herself after a struggle. Outwardly, the two Aes Sedai were serene, yet with determined serenity. A queen ready to fight for her throne, a countrywoman ready to fight for her farm. Oddly, if he had ever seen three people stand together, and not just physically, it was those three, shoulder to shoulder as one. On the opposite side of the bed, Samitsu, with those silver bells in her hair, and a slender sister with thick black eyebrows and a wild look to her raven hair, stood with Cadswain, who had her fists planted on her hips. Samitsu and the raven-haired Aes Sedai wore yellow-fringed shawls, and had jaws set every bit as firmly as Bera or Karuna. Yet Cadswain's stern stare made all four appear hesitant. The two groups of women were not staring at one another, but at the men. At the foot of the bed were Dashiva, with the silver sword and red and gold dragon glittering his collar, and Flynn and Narishma, all grim-faced, trying to watch the women on both sides of the bed at once. Jonan Adley stood beside them, his black coat looking singed on one sleeve. Sidene filled all four men, to overflowing, it seemed. Dashiva held almost as much as Rand could have. Rand looked to Adley, who nodded slightly. Abruptly, Rand realized that he was not wearing anything beneath the sheet that had fallen to his waist, and nothing above except a bandage wound around his middle.
"How long have I been asleep?" he asked. "How is it I'm alive?"
He touched the pale bandage gingerly.
"Fane's dagger came from Shadarlogoth. Once I saw it kill a man in moments with a scratch. He died fast, and he died hard."
Dashiva muttered a curse with Padanfane's name in it. Samitsu and the other yellow exchanged startled looks, but Cadswain merely nodded, the golden ornaments around her iron-gray bun swaying.
"Yes, Shadarlogoth. That would explain several matters. You can thank Sumeko that you're alive, and Master Flynn."
She did not glance toward the grizzled man with his fringe of white hair, but he grinned as though she had given him a bow. In truth, surprisingly, the Yellows did nod to him.
"And Corella here, of course," Cadswain went on. "Each has done a part, including some things I think have not been done since the breaking."
Her voice turned grim.
"Without all three, you would be dead by now. You still may die unless you let yourself be guided. You must rest without exertion."
His stomach rumbled suddenly, loudly, and she added,
"We've only been able to get a little water and broth down you since you were hurt. 2 days is a long time without food for a sick man."
2 days. Only two. He avoided looking at Adley. "I'm getting up," he said.
"I won't let them kill you, sheepherder,"
Min said with an obstinate glint in her eyes.
"And I won't let you kill you either."
She put her arms around his shoulders as if to hold him where he was.
"If the Karakhan wishes to rise," Amis said flatly, "I will have Nandera bring in the maidens from the corridor. Somera and Anila will be especially happy to give him just the assistance he needs."
The corners of her mouth twitched toward a smile. Once a maiden herself, she knew close enough to everything of that situation. Neither Karuna nor Bera smiled. They frowned at him, as at an obstinate fool.
"Boy," Cadswain said dryly, "I've already seen more of your hairless bottom cheeks than I wish to, but if you want to flaunt them in front of all six of us, perhaps someone will enjoy the show. If you fall on your face, though, I may just spank you before I put you back to bed."
By Sumitsu's face and Corella's, they would be happy to assist her. Narishma and Adley stared at Cadswain in shock, while Flynn tugged at his coat as though arguing with himself. Dashiva, though, barked a rough laugh.
"If you want us to clear the women out..."
The plain-faced man began preparing flows. Not shields, but complex weaves of spirit and fire that Rand suspected would put anyone they were laid on in too much pain to think of channeling.
"No,"
he said quickly. Bera and Karuna would obey a simple order to go, and if Corella and Sumitsu had helped keep him alive, he owed them more than pain. But if Cadswain thought nakedness would hold him where he was, she was in for a surprise. He was not sure the maidens had left him any modesty at all. With a smile from Min, he unwound her arms, tossed back the sheet, and climbed out of the bed on Amisa's side. The Wise One's mouth tightened. He could almost see her considering whether to call for the maidens. Bera gave Amis an agonized, uncertain look, while Karuna hurriedly turned her back, her cheeks darkening. Slowly he walked to the wardrobe. Slowly because he expected he might give Cadswain her chance if he tried to move quickly.
"Fah!" she muttered behind him. "I vow I should smack the stubborn boy's bottom."
Someone grunted what might have been agreement, or just disapproval of what he was doing.
"Ah, but it's such a pretty bottom now, isn't it, that?"
someone else said in a lilting Mirandian accent. That must have been Corella. A good thing he had his head inside the wardrobe. Maybe the maidens had not peeled away as much modesty as he thought.
Light.
His face felt hot as a furnace. Hoping the motions of dressing would cover any wobbles, he climbed into his clothes hurriedly. His sword stood propped in the back of the wardrobe, sword belt wound around the dark boarhide scabbard. He touched the long hilt, then took his hand away. Barefoot, he turned back to the others while still tying the laces of his shirt. Min still sat cross-legged on the bed in her snug green silk breeches, by her expression, unable to decide between approval and frustration.
"I need to talk with Dashiva and the other Ashaman," he said. "Alone."
Min scrambled off the bed and ran to hug him. Not tightly. She was very careful of his bandaged side.
"I've waited too long to see you awake again," she said, sliding an arm around his waist. "I need to be with you."
She emphasized that just a tad. She must have had a viewing, or maybe she just wanted to help steady his legs. That arm seemed to offer support. Either way, he nodded. He was not all that steady. Laying a hand on her shoulder, he suddenly realized that he did not want the Ashaman to know how weak he was, any more than Cadswain or Amis. Bera and Karuna made reluctant curtsies and started for the door,
then hesitated when Amis did not move right away.
"So long as you do not intend to leave these rooms," the wise one said, not in the slightest as though speaking to her Karakarn.
Rand raised a naked foot.
"Do I look as though I'm going anywhere?"
Amis sniffed, but with a glance at Adley, she gathered up Bera and Karuna and departed. Cadswain and the other two were only a moment more in going. The gray-haired Green glanced at Adley, too. It could not be much of a secret that he had been gone from Carrion for days. At the door, she paused.
"Don't do anything foolish, boy."
She sounded like a stern aunt, cautioning a shiftless nephew without much expectation he would listen. Sumitsu and Karela followed her out, dividing their frowns between him and the Ashaman. As they vanished, Dashiva laughed, a sharp wheeze, shaking his head. He actually sounded amused. Rand stepped away from Min to fetch his boots from beside the wardrobe and take a rolled pair of stockings from inside.
"I'll join you in the anteroom as soon as I'm booted, Dashiva."
The plain-faced Ashaman gave a start. He had been frowning at Adley.
"As you command, my lord dragon," he said, pressing fist to heart.
Waiting until the four men were gone, Rand sat down in a chair with a feeling of relief and began pulling on his stockings. He was sure his legs felt stronger just for being up and moving. Stronger, but they still did not want to support him very well.
"Are you sure this is wise?"
Min said, kneeling beside his chair, and he gave her a startled look. If he had talked in his sleep during those 2 days, the Aes Sedai would have known. Amis would have had Anila and Somera and 50 more maidens waiting when he woke. He tugged the stocking the rest of the way up.
"Do you have a viewing?"
Min sat back on her heels, folded her arms beneath her breasts, and gave him a firm look. After a moment, she decided it was not working and sighed.
"It's Cadswain. She's going to teach you something. You and the Ashaman. All the Ashaman, I mean. It's something you have to learn, but I don't know what it is, except that none of you will like learning it from her. You aren't going to like it at all."
Rand paused with a boot in hand, then stuffed his foot in. What could Cadswain or any Aes Sedai teach the Ashaman? Women could not teach men or men women. That was as hard a fact as the One Power itself.
"We will see," was all he said.
Plainly, that did not satisfy Min. She knew it would happen, and so did he. She was never wrong. But what could Cadswain possibly teach him? What would he let her teach him? The woman made him unsure of himself, uneasy in a way he had not felt since before the Stone of Tear fell. Stamping his foot to settle it in the second boot, he fetched his sword belt from the wardrobe and a red coat worked in gold, the same he had worn to the sea folk.
"What bargain did Mirana make for me?"
he asked, and she made an exasperated sound in her throat.
"None, as of this morning," she said impatiently. "She and Rafaela haven't left the ship since we did, but they've sent half a dozen messages asking if you're well enough to return. I don't think the bargaining has gone well for them without you. I suppose it's too much to hope that's where you're going."
"Not yet," he told her.
Min said nothing, but she said it very loudly, fists on her hips and one eyebrow raised high.
Well, she would know most of it soon enough.
In the anteroom, all the Ashaman except Dashiva sprang out of their chairs when Rand appeared with Min. Staring at nothing and talking to himself, Dashiva did not notice until Rand reached the rising sun set in the floor, and then he blinked several times before rising. Rand addressed himself to Adley while fastening the dragon-shaped buckle of his sword belt.
"The army's reached the hill forts in Ilion already?"
He wanted to take one of the gilded armchairs, but would not let himself.
"How? It should have been several more days at the best."
"At best?" Flynn and Narishma looked as startled as Dashiva. None of them had known where Adley and Hopwell had gone, or more. Deciding who to trust was always the difficulty, and trust a razor's edge. Adley drew himself up. There was something about his eyes, beneath those thick eyebrows. He had seen the wolf, as they said in Kyrian. The High Lord Wireman left the foot behind and pressed forward with the horse, he said, reporting stiffly. The Aiel kept up, of course. He frowned. We encountered Aiel yesterday. Shido. I don't know how they got there. There were maybe 9 or 10,000 altogether, but they didn't seem to have any wise ones who could channel with him. And they didn't really slow us down. We reached the hill forts at noon today. Rand wanted to snarl. Leaving the foot behind? Did Wireman think he was going to take palisaded forts on hilltops with horsemen? Probably. The man probably would have left the Aiel behind, too, if he could have outrun them. Fool nobles and their fool honor. Still, it did not matter. Except to the men who died because the High Lord Wireman was contemptuous of anyone who did not fight from horseback. Eben and I began destroying the first palisades as soon as we arrived, Adley went on. Wireman didn't much like that. I think he would have stopped us, but he was afraid to. Anyway, we began setting fire to the logs and blowing holes in the walls, but before we more than started, Samael came. A man channeling Saidin, at least, and a lot stronger than Eben or me. As strong as you, my Lord Dragon, I'd say. He was there right away, Rand said incredulously, but then he understood. He had been sure Samael would stay safe in Ilion, behind defenses woven of the power, if he thought he had to face Rand. Too many of the Forsaken had tried, and most were dead now. In spite of himself, Rand laughed and had to hug his side, laughing hurt. All that elaborate deception to convince Samael he would be anywhere but with the invading army to bring the man out of Ilion, and all made unnecessary by a knife in Padan Fane's hand. 2 days. By this time, everybody who had eyes and ears in Carrion, which certainly included the Forsaken, knew that the Dragon Reborn lay on the edge of death. As well toss wet wood on the fire as think otherwise. Men scheme and women plot, but the wheel weaves as it will. That was how they said it in Tyr. Go on, he said. More was with you last night? Yes, my Lord Dragon. Fedwin comes every night, just like he's supposed to. Last night it was plain as Eben's nose we'd reached the forts today. I don't understand any of this. Dashiva sounded upset. A muscle in his cheek was twitching. You've lured him out, but to what purpose? As soon as he feels a man channel with anything near your strength, he'll flee back to Ilion, and whatever traps and alarms he has woven. You won't get at him there. He will know as soon as a gateway opens within a mile of the city. We can save the army, Adley burst out. That's what we can do. Wireman was still sending charges against that fort when I left, and Samael cuts everyone to rags despite anything Eben or I can do. He shifted the arm with the singed sleeve. We have to strike back and run immediately, and even so, he nearly burned us where we stood more than once. The Aiel are taking casualties, too. They're only fighting the Ilioners who come out. The other hill forts must be emptying, so many were coming when I left. But any time Samael sees 50 of us together, Aiel or anybody, he rips them apart. If there were 3 of him, or even 2, I'm not sure I'd find anybody alive when I go back. Dashiva stared at him, as if at a madman, and Adley shrugged suddenly, as though feeling the lightness of his bare black collar compared with the sword and dragon on the older man's. Forgive me, Ashaman, he muttered, abashed, then added in a still lower voice, but we can at least save them. We will, Rand assured him. Just not the way Adley expected. You're all going to help me kill Samael today. Only Dashiva looked startled. The other men just nodded. Not even the Forsaken frightened them anymore. Rand expected argument out of Min, maybe a demand to come along, but she surprised him. I expect you would as soon as no one found out you're gone before they have to, sheepherder. He nodded, and she sighed. Perhaps the Forsaken had to depend on pigeons and eyes and ears, just like anyone else, but being too sure could be fatal. The maidens will want to come if they know Min. They would want to, and he would be hard-pressed to refuse, if he could refuse. Yet the disappearance even of Nandera and whoever she had on guard might be too much. Min sighed again. I suppose I could go talk to Nandera. I might be able to keep them out in the hallway for an hour, but they won't be pleased with me when they find out."
He almost laughed again before he remembered his side. They definitely would not be pleased with her, or with him.
"More to the point, farm boy. Amice won't be pleased. Or Soralia. The things I let you get me into."
He opened his mouth to tell her he had not asked her to do anything, yet before he could utter a word, she moved very close. Looking up at him, through long lashes, she put a hand on his chest, tapping her fingers. She smiled warmly and kept her voice soft, but the fingers were a giveaway.
"If you let anything happen to you, Randall Thor, I'll give Cadswain a hand whether she needs one or not."
Her smile brightened for a moment, almost cheerily, before she turned for the doors. He watched her go. She might make his head spin sometimes. Nearly every woman he had ever met had done that at least a time or two. But she did have a way of walking that made him want to watch. Abruptly he realized Ashiva was watching as well, and licking his lips. Rand cleared his throat loudly enough to be heard over the sound of the door closing behind her. For some reason, the plain-faced man raised his hands defensively. It was not as though Rand glared at him. He could not go around glaring at men just because Min wore tight breeches. Surrounding himself with the emptiness of the void, he seized Sidene and forced frozen fire and molten filth into the weaves for a gateway. Dashiva leaped back as it opened. Maybe having a hand sliced off would teach the man not to lick his lips like a goat. Something crooked and red spiderwebbed across the outside of the void. He stepped through onto bare dirt with Dashiva and the others right behind, releasing the source as soon as the last stepped clear. A sense of loss rushed in as Sayadin left, as awareness of Alana dwindled. The loss had not seemed so great while Luce Theron was there, not so huge. Overhead, the golden sun was more than halfway down to the horizon. A gust of wind swept dust from under his boots without leaving any coolness behind. The gateway had opened in a cleared area, marked off by a rope strung between four wooden posts. At each corner stood a pair of guards in short coats and baggy trousers stuffed into their boots, swords that appeared slightly serpentine, hanging at their sides. Some had heavy mustaches that hung to their chins or thick beards, and all had bold noses and dark eyes that seemed tilted. As soon as Rand appeared, one of them went running. "What are we doing here?" Dashiva said, looking about incredulously. Around them stretched hundreds of sharp-peaked tents, gray and dusty white, tents and picket lines of already saddled horses. Camlin lay not many miles away, hidden behind the trees, and the Black Tower not much farther, but Taim would not know of this unless he had a spy watching. One of Fedwin Moore's tasks had been to listen, to feel for anyone trying to spy. In a ripple of murmurs spreading outward from the ropes, men with bold noses and serpentine swords rose from their heels and turned to stare expectantly toward Rand. Here and there women stood as well. Saldaean women often rode to the wars with their husbands, at least among the nobles and officers. There would be none of that today, though. Ducking under the rope, Rand strode directly to a tent no different from any other, except for the banner on the staff in front, three simple red blossoms on a field of blue. The king's penny did not die back, even in Saldaean winters, and when fires blackened the forests, those red flowers were always the first to reappear. A blossom nothing could kill, the sign of House Bashir. Inside the tent, Bashir himself was already booted and spurred, and his sword on his hip. Ominously, Dira was with him, in a riding dress the same shade as her husband's gray coat, and if she wore no sword, the long dagger at her belt of heavy silver rondelles would do to go on with. The leather gauntlets tucked behind that belt spoke of someone meaning to ride hard. "I hadn't expected this for days yet," Bashir said, rising from a folding camp chair. "Weeks, I hoped, in truth. I'd hoped to have most of Taim's leavings armed the way young Matt and I planned. I've gathered every maker of crossbows I could find into a manufactory, and they're starting to produce them like a sow dropping piglets, but as it is, no more than 15,000 have crossbows and know what to do with them." With a questioning look, he lifted a silver pitcher from atop the maps spread out on his folding table. "Do we have time for punch?"
"No punch,"
Rand said impatiently. Bashir had spoken before about the men Taim found, who could not learn to channel, but he had scarcely listened. If Bashir thought he had trained them well enough, that was all that mattered. Dashiva and three more Ashaman are waiting outside. As soon as Moore joins them, we'll be ready. He eyed Dira Nigaline Tibashir, towering over her diminutive husband with her hawk's beak of a nose and her eyes that made a hawk's look mild. No punch, Lord Bashir. And no wives. Not today. Dira opened her mouth, her dark eyes all but glowing suddenly. No wives, Bashir said, knuckling his heavy gray-streaked mustaches. I will pass the order. Turning to Dira, he held out his hand. Wife, he said mildly. Rand winced, mild tone or no, and waited for the eruption. Dira's mouth thinned. She scowled down at her husband, a hawk ready to stoop on a mouse. Not that Bashir looked anything like a mouse, of course. Just a much smaller hawk. She drew a deep breath. Dira could make drawing a deep breath seem a thing that should cause the earth to tremble. And unhooking her sheathed dagger from her belt, she laid it in her husband's hand.
"We will talk of this later, Davram," she said. "At length."
One day when he had time, Rand decided, he was going to make Bashir explain how he did that. If there ever was time. At length, Bashir agreed, grinning through his mustaches as he stuffed the dagger behind his own belt. Maybe the man was simply suicidal. The rope had been taken down outside, and Rand stood waiting with Dashiva and the other Ashaman, while 9,000 Saldaean light horse arrayed themselves behind Bashir in a column of threes. Somewhere behind them, 15,000 men who called themselves the Legion of the Dragon would be gathering afoot. Rand had glimpsed them, everyone in a blue coat made to button up the side so the red and gold dragon across the chest would not be broken. Most carried steel-armed crossbows. Some bore heavy, unwieldy shields instead, but not one carried a pike. Whatever odd notion Matt and Bashir had cooked up, Rand hoped it would not lead a lot of this legion to death. Moore grinned eagerly while he waited, all but bouncing on his toes. Perhaps he was simply glad to be back in his black coat with the silver sword on his collar, yet Adli and Narishma wore almost identical grins, and for that matter, Flynn's was not far off. They knew where they were going now, and what to do there. Dashiva was scowling at nothing, as usual, his lips moving silently, as usual. Also silent, scowling, were the Saldaean women gathered behind Dira, watching from one side. Eagles and falcons, feathers ruffled and furious. Rand did not care how they grimaced and frowned. If he could face Nandera and the rest of the maidens after keeping them back from this, then the Saldaean men could put up with any number of lengthy discussions. Today, the light willing, no women would die because of him. So many men could not be lined up in a minute, even when they had been awaiting the order. But in a remarkably short time, Bashir raised his sword and called, "My Lord Dragon!" A shout rippled down the great column behind him. "The Lord Dragon!" Seizing the source, Rand made a gateway between the posts, 4 paces by 4, and ran through as he tied off the weave, filled with Sayadin, and the Ashaman on his heels, into a great open square surrounded by huge white columns, each topped with a marble wreath of olive branches. At the two ends of the square stood nearly identical purple-roofed palaces of columned walks and high balconies and slender spires. Those were the King's Palace and the slightly smaller Great Hall of the Council. And this was the square of Tammuz, in the heart of Ilion. A skinny man in a blue coat, with a beard that left his upper lip bare, stood gaping at the sight of Rand and the black-coated Ashaman leaping out of a hole in midair, and a stout woman, in a green dress cut high enough to show green slippers and her ankles in green stockings, pressed both hands to her face and stood rooted right in front of them, her dark eyes popping. All the people were stopping to stare, hawkers with their trays, carters halting their oxen, men and women and children with their mouths hanging open. Rand thrust his hands high and channeled.
"I am the Dragon Reborn!"
The words boomed across the square, amplified by air and fire, and flames shot up from his hands 100 feet. Behind him, the Ashaman filled the sky with balls of fire streaking in every direction, all save to Shiva, who made blue lightnings crackle in a jagged web above the square. No more was needed. A shrieking flood of humanity fled in all directions, away from the square of Tammuz. They fled just in time. Rand and the Ashaman darted aside from the gateway, and Davram Bashir led his wildly screaming Saldaeans into Ilion, a flood of horsemen waving their swords as they poured out. Straight ahead, Bashir led the center line of the column, just as they had planned what seemed so long ago, while the other two lines peeled off to either side. They streamed away from the gateway, breaking apart into smaller groups, galloping into the streets leading out of the square. Rand did not wait to see the last of the horsemen exit. With well under a third out of the gateway, he immediately wove another, smaller opening. You did not need to know a place at all to travel if you only intended to go a very short distance. Around him he felt Dashiva and the rest weaving their gateways. But he was already stepping through his own, letting it close behind him atop one of the slender towers of the king's palace. Absently, he wondered whether Matin Stepaneos Din Bolgar, the king of Ilion, was somewhere below him at that moment. The top of the spire stretched no more than 5 paces across, surrounded by a wall of red stone not quite chest-high on him. At 50 paces, it was the highest point in all of the city. From there he could see across rooftops glittering beneath the afternoon sun, red and green and every color, to the long earthen causeways that cut through the vast tall grass marsh surrounding city and harbor. A sharp tang of salt hung in the air. Ilion had no need of walls with that all-enveloping marsh to stop an attacker, any attacker who could not make holes in the air. But then, walls would have done no good either. It was a pretty city, the buildings mainly of pale-dressed stone, a city crisscrossed by as many canals as streets, like traceries of blue-green from this height. But he did not stop to admire it. Low across the roofs of taverns and shops and spired palaces, he directed flows of air and water, fire and earth and spirit, turning as he did so. He did not try to weave the flows, simply swept them out over the city and a good mile out over the marsh. From 5 other towers came flows sweeping low, and where they touched one another uncontrolled, light flashed and sparks flared and clouds of colored steam burst, a display any illuminator might have envied. A better way to frighten people under their beds and out of the way of Bashir's soldiers he could not imagine, though that was not the reason for it. Long ago he had decided that Samael must have wards woven throughout the city, set to give an alarm should anyone channel Sayadin. Wards inverted so no one except Samael himself could find them. Wards that would tell Samael exactly where that man was channeling so he could be destroyed on the instant. With luck, every one of those wards was being triggered now. Luz Theron had been sure Samael would sense them wherever he was, even at a distance. That was why the wardings should be useless now. That sort had to be remade once triggered. Samael would come. Never in his life had he relinquished anything he considered his, however shaky his claim, not without a fight. All that from Luz Theron. If he was real, he had to be. Those memories had too much detail. But could not a madman dream his fancies in detail, too? Luz Theron, he called silently. The wind blowing across Ilion answered. Below, the square of Tammuz stood deserted and silent, empty except for a few abandoned carts. Edge on, the gateway was invisible except for the weaves. Reaching down to those weaves, Rand untied the knot and, as the gateway winked from existence, reluctantly released Sayadin. All the flows vanished from the sky. Maybe some of the Ashaman still held on to the source, but he had told them not to. He had told them that any man he felt channeling in Ilion once he himself stopped, he intended to kill without warning. He did not want to find out afterward that the channeler had been one of them. He leaned on the wall, waiting, wishing he could sit. His legs ached and his side burned however he stood, yet he might need to see as well as feel a weave. The city was not entirely quiet. From several directions he could hear distant shouts, the faint clash of metal. Even moving so many men to the border, Samael had not left Ilion entirely unprotected. Rand turned, trying to watch in every direction. He thought Samael would come to the king's palace, or that other at the far end of the square, but he could not be certain. Down one street he saw a band of Saldaeans clashing with an equal number of mounted men in shining breastplates. More Saldaeans suddenly galloped in from one side, and the fight vanished from his sight behind buildings. In another direction he spotted some of the Legion of the Dragon marching across a canal's low bridge. An officer marked by a tall red plume on his helmet strode ahead of some 20 men carrying wide shields as tall as their shoulders, followed by perhaps 200 more with heavy crossbows. How would they fight? Shouts, and steel ringing on steel in the distance, the faint screams of dying men. The sun slid downward, and shadows lengthened across the city. Twilight, and the sun a low crimson dome in the west. A few stars appeared. Had he been wrong? Would Samael simply go elsewhere, find another land to master? Had he been listening to anything other than his own mad ramblings? A man channeled. For a moment, Rand froze, staring at the great hall of the council. That had been enough of Sidene for a gateway. He might not have felt a much smaller channeling the length of the square. It had to be Samael. In an instant, he had seized the source, woven a gateway, and leaped through with lightning ready to fly from his hands. It was a large room, lit by huge mirrored, golden stand lamps, and others hanging on chains from the ceiling, with snowy white marble walls carved in friezes showing battles, and ships crowding the marsh-bordered harbor of Ilion itself. At the far end of the room, 9 heavily carved and gilded armchairs stood like thrones atop a high, stair-fronted white dais, the center chair with a back higher than any other. Before he could release the gateway behind him, the tower top where he had stood exploded. He felt the wash of fire and earth even as a storm of stone fragments and dust struck through the gateway, knocking him down on his face. Pain stabbed his side as he landed, a sharp red lance digging into the void where he floated, and that as much as anything else made him release the gateway. Someone else's pain, someone else's weakness. He could ignore them in the void. He moved, forcing another man's muscles to work, pushed himself up and scrambled away in a lurching run toward the dais, just as hundreds of red filaments burned down through the ceiling, burned through the sea-blue marble floor in a wide circle all around where the residue of his gateway was still fading. One stab through the heel of his boot, through his heel, and he heard himself cry out as he fell. Not his pain, inside or foot. Not his. Rolling onto his back, he could see the remnants of those burning red wires still, fresh enough to make out fire and air, woven in a way he had not known. Enough to make out exactly the direction they had come from. Black holes in the floor, and ornately worked white plaster ceiling high overhead, hissed and crackled loudly at the touch of the air. His hands rose, and he wove balefire. Began to weave it. Someone else's cheek stung from a remembered slap, and Cadswain's voice hissed and crackled in his head, like the holes the red filaments had made. "Never again, boy. You will never do that again." It seemed that he heard Luz Theron whimpering in distant fear of what he was about to loose, what had almost destroyed the world once. Every flow but fire and air fell away, and he wove as he had seen. 1,000 fine hairs of red blossomed between his hands. Fanning out slightly, they shot upward. A circle of the ceiling, 2 feet across, fell in stone chips and plaster dust. Only after he had done it did he think that there might be someone between him and Samael. He intended to see Samael dead this day, but if he could do it without killing anyone else... The weaves vanished as he pulled himself to his feet once more, and limped hurriedly to the doors in the side of the hall, tall things with every panel set with 9 golden bees the size of his fist. A small flow of air pushed one door open before he reached it, too small to be detected at any distance. Hobbling into the corridor, he sank to one knee. The other man's side was fire, his heel agony. Rand pulled his sword up and leaned on it, waiting. A clean-shaven fellow with plump pink cheeks peered around a corner down the way. Enough of his coat showed to name him a servant. At least, a coat green on one side and yellow on the other looked like livery. The fellow saw Rand, and, very slowly, as though he might not be noticed if he moved slowly enough, slid back out of sight. Sooner or later, Samael would have to.
"Ilion belongs to me!"
The voice boomed in the air from every direction, and Rand cursed. That had to be the same weave he himself had used in the square, or something very like. It required so little of the power, he might not have felfelt the actual flows had he been within 10 paces of the man.
"Ilion is mine. I won't destroy what belongs to me killing you. And I won't let you destroy it either. You had the nerve to come after me here? Do you have the courage to follow me again?
A sly mocking tone entering that thundering voice.
Do you have the courage?
Somewhere above, a gateway opened and closed. Rand had no doubt that was what it was. The courage? Did he have the courage?
I'm the dragon reborn, he muttered, and I'm going to kill you.
Weaving a gateway, he stepped through to a place floors above. It was another hallway, lined with wall hangings showing ships at sea. At the far end, the last crimson sliver of the sun shone through a colonnaded walk. The residue of Samael's gateway hung in the air, the dissipating flows like faintly glowing ghosts. Not so faint, Rand could not make them out, though. He began to weave, then stopped. He had leaped up here without a thought of a trap. If he copied what he saw exactly, he would step out wherever Samael had, or so close as made no difference. But with just a slight alteration, no way to be sure whether the change was 50 feet or 500, yet either was close enough. The vertical silver slash began to rotate open, revealing the shadow-cloaked ruins of greatness, not quite as dark as the hallway. Seen through the gateway, the sun was a slightly thicker slice of red, half hidden by a shattered dome. He knew that place. The last time he had gone there, he had added a name to that list of maidens in his head. The first time, Padan Thane had followed and become more than a dark friend, worse than a dark friend. That Samael had fled to Shadar-Logoth seemed like coming full circle in more ways than one. There was no time to waste now that he was opening the way. Before the gateway stopped widening, he ran through into the ravaged city that once had been called Aradhol, ran limping, letting the weave go as he ran, boots crunching on broken paving stones and dead weeds. The first corner he came to, he ducked around. The ground shook under his feet as roars sounded back the way he had come, light flashing atop flash in the twilight darkness. He felt the wash of earth and fire and air. Shrieks and bellows rose through the thunderous crashes. Saeedin pulsing inside him, he hobbled away without looking back. He ran, and with the power filling him, even in the dark shadows he could see clearly. All around the great city lay huge marble palaces, each with 4 and 5 domes of different shapes painted crimson by the setting sun, bronze fountains and statues at every intersection, great stretches of columns running to towers that soared across the sun. They soared when intact, at least. More ended in abrupt jaggedness than not. For every dome that stood whole, 10 were broken eggshells, with the top hacked off, or one side gone. Statues lay toppled in fragments or stood with missing arms or heads. Swiftly deepening darkness raced across sprawling hills of rubble, the few stunted trees clinging to their slopes twisted shapes like broken fingers against the sky. A fan of bricks and stone spread across the way from what might have been a small palace. Half its front missing, the rest of the columned facade leaned drunkenly toward the street. He stopped in the middle of the street, just short of the fan, waiting, feeling for another to use Saeedin. Clinging to the sides of the street was not a good idea, and not simply because any building might fall at any time. 1,000 unseen eyes seemed to watch from windows like gouged eye sockets, to watch with a nearly palpable sense of anticipation. Distantly he felt the new wound in his side throbbing, a slash of flame, echoing the evil that clung to the very dust of Shadar-Logoth. The old scar clenched like a fist. The pain of his foot seemed very distant indeed. Closer, the void itself pulsated around him, the Dark One's taint and Saeedin beating in time with a knife slash across his ribs. A dangerous place by daylight, Shadar-Logoth, by night. Down the street, beyond a spired monument, miraculously standing straight, something moved. A shadowed shape darting across the way in the darkness. Rand almost channeled, but he could not believe Samael would go scudding that way. When he first stepped into the city, when Samael tried to destroy everything around his gateway, he had heard horrible screams. They had barely registered then. Nothing lived in Shadar-Logoth, not even rats. Samael must have brought henchmen, fellows he did not mind killing in an attempt to reach Rand. Maybe one of them could lead Rand to Samael. He hurried forward as fast as he could, as soundlessly as he could.
Shattered pavement crunched under his boots with a sound like bones snapping. He hoped it was loud only to his sidine-enhanced ears. Stopping at the base of the spire, a thick stone needle covered with flowing script, he peered ahead. Whoever had moved was gone. Only fools or the madly brave went inside Chadalogoth at night. The evil that stained Chadalogoth, the evil that had murdered Aridhol, had not died with Aridhol. Farther along the street, a tendril of silver-gray fog wavered out of a window, creeping toward another that came to meet it from a wide gap in a high stone wall. The depth of that gap shone, as though a full moon lay inside. With the night, Mashadar roamed its city prison, a vast presence that could appear in a dozen places at once, 100. Mashadar's touch was not a pleasant way to die. Inside Rand, the taint on Sidene beat harder. The distant fire in his side flickered like 10,000 lightnings, one on top of the last. Even the ground seemed to pound beneath his boots. He turned, half thinking to leave now. Very likely Samael had gone, now that Mashadar was out. Very likely the man had lured him here in the hope he would search the ruins until Mashadar killed him. He turned and stopped, crouching against the spire. Two Trollocs were creeping down that street, bulky shapes in black mail, half again as tall as he, or more. Spikes stood out on the shoulders and elbows of their armor, and they carried spears with long black points and wicked hooks. To his sidene-filled eyes, their faces stood out clearly, one distorted by an eagle's beak where mouth and nose should have been, the other by a boar's tusked snout. Every line of their creeping shouted fear. Trollocs loved killing, loved blood, but Chadalogoth terrified them. There would be Murdral about. No Trolloc would have entered this city without Murdral to drive it. No Murdral would have entered without Samael driving. All of which meant Samael must still be here, or these Trollocs would be running for the gates, not hunting. And they were hunting. That boar's snout was snuffling the air for a scent. Abruptly, a figure in rags leaped from a window above the Trollocs, falling on them with spear already stabbing. An Aiel, a woman, shufa wrapped around her head, but veil hanging. The eagle-beaked Trolloc shrieked as her spear point stabbed deep into its side, stabbed again. As its companion fell, kicking, Borsnout spun with snarl, thrusting viciously, but she ducked low under the black hooked point, and stabbed up into the creature's stomach, and it went down in a thrashing heap with the other. Rand was on his feet and running before he thought.
"Lya!"
he shouted. He had thought her dead, abandoned here by him, dead for him. Lya of the Corsaida Charin. That name blazed on the list in his head. She whirled to confront him, spear ready in one hand, round bullhide buckler in the other. The face he remembered as pretty despite scars on both cheeks was contorted with rage.
"Mine!" she hissed threateningly through her teeth. "Mine! No one may come here! No one!"
He stopped in his tracks. That spear waited, eager to seek his ribs, too.
"Lya, you know me," he said softly. "You know me. I'll take you back to the maidens, back to your spear sisters."
He held out his hand. Her rage melted into a twisted frown. She tilted her head to one side.
"Randall Thor,"
she said slowly. Her eyes widened, falling to the dead Trollocs, and a look of horror spread across her face.
"Randall Thor,"
she whispered, fumbling the black veil into place across her face with the hand that held her spear.
"The Karakarn,"
she wailed, and fled. He hobbled after her, scrambling over piles of rubble spread across the street, falling, ripping his coat, falling again, and nearly ripping it off, rolling and picking himself up on the run. The weakness of his body was distant, and the pain of it, but even floating deep in the void he could only push that body so hard. Lya vanished into the night. Around the next black-shadowed corner, he thought. He limped around that as fast as he could, and nearly ran into four black-mailed Trollocs and a Murdral, inky cloak hanging unnaturally still down its back as the fade moved. The Trollocs snarled in surprise, yet shock lasted less than a heartbeat. Hooked spears and scythe-curved swords rose. The Murdral's dead black blade was in its fist, a blade that gave wounds almost as deadly as Fane's dagger. Rand did not even try to draw the Heronmark sword at his side. Death in a tattered red coat, he channeled, and a sword of fire was in his hands, pulsing darkly with the throb of Saidine, sweeping an eyeless head from its shoulders. Simpler to have destroyed them all the way he had seen the Ashaman kill at Dumai's Wells, but changing the weaves now, trying to change, might take a fatal moment. Those swords could kill even him. He danced the forms in a darkness lit by the flame in his hands, shadows flying across faces above him, faces with wolves' muzzles and goats, faces contorted in screams as his fiery blade sliced through black mail and the flesh beneath, as if they were water. Trollocs depended on numbers and overwhelming ferocity. Facing him and that sword of the power, they might as well have stood stock still, unarmed. The sword vanished from his hands. Still poised at the end of the form called Twisting the Wind, he stood among death. The last Trolloc to fall still thrashed, goat horns scraping on the fragmented pavement. The headless Murdral yet flung its arms about, of course, booted feet scrabbling wildly. Halfmen did not die quickly, even headless. No sooner did the sword disappear than silver lightning lanced down from the cloudless, starry sky. The first bolt struck with a deafening roar not 4 paces away. The world turned white, and the void collapsed. The ground bounced under him as another bolt struck, and another. He had not realized he was on his face until then. The air crackled. Dazed, he pushed himself up, half falling as he ran from a hail of lightning that ripped the street apart to a thunder of collapsing buildings. Straight ahead he staggered, not caring where, so long as it was away. Suddenly his head cleared enough for him to see where he was, reeling across a vast stone floor covered with tumbled chunks of stone, some as big as he. Here and there, dark, uneven holes gaped in the floor stones. All around rose high walls and tier upon tier of deep balconies that ran all the way around. Only a small portion of what had once been a vast roof remained at one corner. Stars shone bright overhead. He lurched another step, and the floor gave way beneath him. Desperately, he flung out his hands. With a jolt, the right hand caught hold of a rough edge. He dangled into pitch blackness. The fall beneath his boots might be a few spans into a basement, or a mile, for all he could tell. He could latch bands of air to the jagged rim of the hole above his head to help pull himself out, except somehow Samael had sensed the relatively small amount of Saidine used in the sword. There had been a delay before the lightning struck, but he could not say how long he had taken killing the Trollocs. A minute? Seconds? With a heave, he swung his left arm up, trying to catch the edge of the hole. Pain no longer buffered by the void stabbed through his side like a dagger going in. Spots danced in his vision. Worse, his right hand slipped on crumbling stone, and he could feel his fingers weakening. He was going to have to. A hand grabbed his right wrist.
"You are a fool," a man's deep voice said. "Count yourself lucky I don't care to see you die today."
The hand began drawing him up.
"Are you going to help?" the voice demanded. "I don't intend to carry you on my shoulders or kill Samael for you."
Shaking off his shock, Rand reached up and grabbed the rim of the hole, pulling despite the agony of his side. Despite the agony, he managed to acquire the void again, too, and seize Saidine. He did not channel, but he wanted to be ready. His head and shoulders came above the floor, and he could see the other man, a big fellow, little older than he, with hair black as the night, and a coat black as an Ashaman's. Rand had never seen him before. At least he was not one of the Forsaken. Those faces he knew. He thought he did, anyway.
"Who are you?" he demanded.
Still heaving, the man barked a laugh.
"Just say I'm a wanderer passing through. Do you really want to talk now?"
Saving his breath, Rand struggled upward, getting his chest over the lip, his waist. Abruptly, he realized that a glow bathed the floor around them, like the glow of a full moon. Twisting to look over his shoulder, he saw Mashadar. Not a tendril, but a shining silver-gray wave rolling out of one of the balconies, arching over their heads, descending. Without a thought, his free hand rose and balefire shot upward, a bar of liquid white fire slicing across the wave sinking toward them. Dimly he was aware of another bar of pale solid fire rising from the other man's hand that was not clasping his,
a bar slashing the opposite way from his. The two touched. Head ringing like a struck gong, Rand convulsed, sighting and the void shattering. Everything was doubled in his eyes, the balconies, the chunks of stone lying about the floor. There seemed to be a pair of the other man overlapping one another, each clutching his head between two hands. Blinking, Rand searched for Mashadar. The wave of shining mist was gone. A glow remained in the balconies above, but dimming, receding, as Rand's eyes began to clear. Even mindless Mashadar fled balefire, it seemed. Unsteadily, he got to his feet and offered a hand.
"I think we best move quickly. What happened there?"
The other man pushed himself up, with a grimace at Rand's proffered hand. He was easily as tall as Rand, rare except among the Aiel.
"I don't know what happened," he snarled. "Run if you want to live."
He suited his own words immediately, dashing toward a row of open arches. Not in the nearest wall. Mashadar had come from that one. Fumbling for the void, Rand limped after him as best he could, but before they were completely across the floor, the lightnings fell again, a storm of silver arrows. The two of them darted through the archways, pursued by the thunder of walls and floor collapsing behind them, by clouds of dust and a hail of stones. Shoulders hunched and an arm across his face, Rand ran coughing through a broad room where trembling arches supported the ceiling and bits of stone rained down. He burst out into a street before he knew it, stumbling three steps before stopping. The pain in his side made him want to bend over, but he thought his legs might give way if he did. His wounded foot throbbed. It seemed a year ago that that red wire of fire and air had stabbed his heel. His rescuer stood watching him. Covered with dust head to toe, the fellow managed to look like a king.
"Who are you?" Rand asked again. "One of Taim's men? Or did you teach yourself? You can go to Camelin, you know, to the Black Tower. You don't have to live afraid of Aes Sedai."
For some reason, saying that made him frown. He could not understand why.
"I have never been afraid of Aes Sedai," the man snapped, then drew a deep breath. "You probably should leave here now, but if you intend to stay and kill Samael, you had better try thinking like him. You have shown you can. He always liked destroying a man in sight of one of that man's triumphs, if he could. Lacking that, somewhere the man had marked as his would do."
"The Waygate," Rand said slowly.
If he could be said to have marked anything in Shadar Logoth, it had to be the Waygate.
"He's waiting near the Waygate, and he has traps set.
Wards as well, it seemed, like those in Ilion, to detect a man channeling. Samael had planned this well." The man laughed wryly.
"You can find the way, it seems, if you're led by the hand. Try not to stumble. A great many plans will have to be relayed if you let yourself be killed now."
Turning, he started across the street for an alleyway just ahead of them.
"Wait!"
Rand called. The fellow kept on, not looking back.
"Who are you? What plans?"
The man vanished into the alley. Rand teetered after him, but when he reached the mouth of the narrow alley, it was empty. Unbroken walls ran a good 100 paces to another street, where a glow told of yet another part of Mashadar abroad. But the man was gone, which was purely impossible. The fellow had had time to make a gateway, of course, if he knew how, but the residue would have been visible, and besides, that much of Sidene being woven so near would have shouted at him. Suddenly he realized that he had not felt Sidene when the man made balefire either. Just thinking of that, of the two streams touching, made his vision double again. Just for an instant he could see the man's face again, sharp where everything else blurred. He shook his head until it cleared.
"Who in the light are you?" he whispered.
And after a moment,
"What in the light are you?"
Whoever or whatever, the man was gone, though. Samael was still in Shadar Logoth. With an effort, he managed to regain the void once more. The taint on Sidene vibrated now, humming its way deep into him. The void itself vibrated. But the weakness of watery muscles and the pain of injuries faded. He was going to kill one of the Forsaken before this night was done. Limping, he ghosted through the dark streets, placing his feet with great care. He still made noise, but the night was full of noise now. Shrieks and guttural cries sounded in the distance.
Mindless Mashadar killed whatever it found, and Trollocs were dying in Shadar Logoth tonight as they had once long, long ago. Sometimes down a crossing street he saw Trollocs, two or five or a dozen, occasionally with a half-man, but most often not. None saw him, and he did not bother them. Not simply because Samael would detect any channeling. Those Trollocs and Murdral that Mashadar did not kill were still dead. Samael had almost certainly brought them by the ways, but apparently he did not realize just how Rand had marked the waygate here. Well short of the square where the waygate lay, Rand stopped and looked around. Nearby, a tower stood seemingly whole. Not nearly as tall as some, its top still rose more than 50 paces above the ground. The dark doorway at its base was empty, the wood long rotted away, and the hinges gone to dust. Through blackness relieved only by faint starlight through the windows, he climbed the winding stairs slowly, small clouds puffing up beneath his boots, every second step a stab of pain up his leg. Distant pain. On the tower top, he leaned against the smooth parapet to catch his breath. The idle thought came that he would never hear the end if Min learned of this. Min, or Amis, or Cadswain, for that matter. Across missing rooftops, he could see the great square that had been one of the most important in Ard Hol. Once an Ogier grove had covered this part of the land, but within 30 years after the Ogier who had built the oldest parts of the city departed, the residents had cut down the trees to make room for expanding Ard Hol. Palaces and the remains of palaces surrounded the huge square, the glow of Mashadar shining deep inside a few windows, and a huge mound of rubble covered one end, but in the center stood the waygate, apparently a tall, broad piece of stone. He was not close enough to see the delicately carved leaves and vines that covered it, but he could make out the toppled pieces of high fence that had once surrounded it. Power-wrought metal lying in a heap, they gleamed untarnished in the night. He could also see the trap he had woven around the waygate, inverted so no eye but his could see it. No way to tell by looking whether the Trollocs and Halfmen really had passed through it, yet if they had, they would die before long. A nasty thing. Whatever traps Samael had made down there were invisible to him, but that was expected. Likely they were not very pleasant either. At first he could not see Samael, but then someone moved among the fluted flaring columns of a palace. Rand waited. He wanted to be sure. He had only one chance. The figure stepped forward, out of the columns, and a pace into the square, head swinging this way and that. Samael, with snowy lace shining at his throat, waiting to see Rand walk into the square, into the traps. Behind him, the glow in the windows of the palace brightened. Samael peered into the darkness lying across the square, and Mashadar oozed out of the windows, thick billows of silver-gray fog sliding together, merging as they loomed above his head. Samael walked a little to one side, and the wave began to descend, slowly picking up speed as it fell. Rand shook his head. Samael was his. The flows needed for balefire seemed to gather themselves, despite the far echo of Cadswain's voice. He raised his hand. A scream tore the darkness, a woman shrieking in agony beyond knowing. Rand saw Samael turn to stare toward the great mound of rubble, even as his own eyes flashed that way. Atop the mound, a shape stood outlined against the night sky in coat and breeches, a single thin tendril of Mashadar touching her leg. Arms outstretched, she thrashed about, unable to move from the spot, and her wordless wail seemed to call Rand's name. "Lyra," he whispered. Unconsciously he reached out, as though he could stretch his arm across the intervening distance and pull her away. Nothing could save what Mashadar touched, though. No more than anything could have saved him had Fane's dagger plunged into his heart. "Lyra," he whispered, and balefire leaped from his hand. For less than a heartbeat, the shape of her still seemed to be there, all in stark blacks and snowy whites. And then she was gone, dead before her agony began. Screaming, Rand swept the balefire down toward the square, the rubble collapsing on itself, swept down death out of time, and let Sidene go before the bar of white touched the lake of Mashadar that now rolled across the square, billowing past the waygate toward rivers of glowing gray that flowed out from another palace on the other side. Samael had to be dead. He had to be. There had not been time for him to run, no time to weave a gateway,
and if he had, Rand would have felt Saeedine being worked. Samael was dead, killed by an evil almost as great as himself. Emotion raced across the outside of the void. Rand wanted to laugh, or perhaps cry. He had come here to kill one of the Forsaken, but instead he had killed a woman he had abandoned here to her fate. For a long time he stood on the tower top while the waning moon crossed the sky, almost at its half. Stood watching Mashadar fill the square completely, till only the very top of the waygate rose above the surface of the fog. Slowly it began to ebb away, hunting elsewhere. If Samael had been alive, he could have killed the dragon reborn easily then. Rand was not sure he would have cared. Finally, he opened a gateway for skimming and made a platform, a railless disk, half white and half black. Skimming was slower than traveling. It took him at least half an hour to reach Ilion, and the whole way he burned Lyha's name into his mind again and again, flailing himself with it. He wished he could cry. He thought he had forgotten how. They were waiting for him in the king's palace in the throne room, Bashir and Dashiva and the Asherman. It was exactly like the room he had seen at the other end of the square, down to the stand lamps and the scenes carved into the marble walls and the long white dais. Exactly the same, except for being slightly larger in every dimension, and instead of 9 chairs on the dais, there was only a great gilded throne with leopards for its arms, and 9 fist-sized golden bees that would stand above the head of whoever sat in it. Wearily, Rand sat himself down on the steps at the front of the dais.
"I take it Samael is dead," Bashir said, looking him up and down in his ragged coat and dust.
"He's dead," Rand said. Dashiva sighed loudly with relief.
"The city is ours," Bashir went on, "or I should say, yours."
He laughed suddenly.
"The fighting stopped quick enough once the right people found out it was you. Not much to it in the end."
Dried blood made a black stain down one torn sleeve of his coat.
"The council has been waiting eagerly for you to come back. Anxiously, you might say," he added with a wry grin.
8 sweating men had been standing at the far end of the throne room since Rand came in. They wore dark silk coats with gold or silver embroidery on the lapels and sleeves, and falls of lace at their throats and wrists. Some wore a beard that left the upper lip shaved clean, but every one had a broad sash of green silk slanted across his chest, with 9 golden bees marching up it. At Bashir's gesture, they came forward, bowing to Rand at about every third step, for all the world as though he wore the finest garment sewn. A tall man seemed to be the leader, a round-faced fellow with one of those beards, with a natural dignity that appeared strained by worry.
"My lord dragon,"
he said, bowing again and pressing both hands to his heart.
"Forgive me, but Lord Bren do be nowhere to be found, and—"
"He won't be," Rand said flatly. A muscle in the man's face jumped at Rand's tone, and he swallowed.
"As you do say, my lord dragon," he murmured.
"I do be Lord Gregorin den Lucianos, my lord dragon. In Lord Bren's absence, I do speak for the Council of 9. We do offer you—"
A hand at his side waved vigorously at a shorter, beardless man who stepped forward bearing a cushion draped with a length of green silk.
"We do offer you Ilion."
The shorter man whipped the cloth away, revealing a heavy gold circlet, 2 inches wide, of laurel leaves.
"The city do be yours, of course," Gregorin went on anxiously. "We did put an end to all resistance. We do offer you the crown and the throne and all of Ilion."
Rand stared at the crown on its cushion, not moving a muscle. People had thought he meant to make himself a king in Tyr, feared he would in Carrion and Andor, but no one had offered him a crown before.
"Why? Is Matin Stepanaeus so willing to give up his throne?"
"King Matin did disappear 2 days ago," Gregorin said. "Some of us do fear. We do fear Lord Bren may have something to do with it. Bren does have—"
He stopped to swallow.
"Bren did have a great deal of influence with the king. Some might say too much.
but he did be distracted in recent months, and Matten had begun to reassert himself.
Strips of grimy coat sleeve and pieces of shirt sleeve dangled as Rand reached to pick up the laurel crown. The dragon wound around his forearm glittered in the lamplight as brightly as the golden crown. He turned it in his hands.
"You still haven't said why."
"Because I conquered you?"
He had conquered Tyr and Cairhien, too, but some turned on him in both lands still. Yet it seemed to be the only way.
"That do be part," Gregorin said dryly. "Even so, we might have chosen one of our own. Kings have come from the council before. But the grain you did order sent from Tyr has your name on every lip with the light. Without that, many would be dead of starvation. Bren did see every stick of bread go to the army."
Rand blinked and snatched one hand from the crown to suck on a pricked finger. Almost buried among the laurel leaves of the crown were the sharp points of swords. How long ago had he commanded the Tyrans to sell grain to their ancient enemy, sell it, or die for refusing? He had not realized they kept on after he began preparations to invade Ilion. Maybe they feared to bring it up, but they had feared to stop, too. Maybe he had earned some right to this crown. Gingerly, he set the circle of laurel leaves on his head. Half those swords pointed up, half down. No head would wear this crown casually or easily. Gregorin bowed smoothly.
"The light illumine Randall Thor, King of Ilion," he intoned,
and the seven other lords bowed with him, murmuring, "The light illumine Randall Thor, King of Ilion." Bashir contented himself with a bow of his head. He was uncle to a queen, after all. But Dashiva cried out,
"All hail Randall Thor, King of the World!"
Flynn and the other Ashaman took it up.
"All hail Randall Thor, King of the World! All hail the King of the World!"
That had a good sound to it. The story spread, as stories will, and changed as stories change with time and distance, spreading out from Ilion by coasting ships and merchant trains of wagons, and pigeons sent in secret, spreading in ripples that danced with other ripples and made new. An army had come to Ilion, the story said, an army of Aiel, of Aes Sedai appearing from thin air, of men who could channel riding winged beasts, even an army of Saldaeans, though not many believed that one. Some tales said the dragon reborn had been presented the laurel crown of Ilion by the Council of Nine, and others by Matten Stepanaeus himself on bended knee. Some said the dragon reborn had wrenched the crown from Matten's head, then stuck that head on a spike. No, the dragon reborn had raised Ilion to the ground and buried the old king in the rubble. No, he and his army of Ashaman had burned Ilion out of the earth. No, it was Ebu Dar he had destroyed, after Ilion. One fact, though, turned up again and again in those tales. The laurel crown of Ilion had been given a new name, the Crown of Swords. And for some reason, men and women who told the tales often found a need to add almost identical words. "The storm is coming," they said, staring southward in worry. "The storm is coming."